This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is North Dakota U.S. Senator John Hoeven. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Senator John Hoeven next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net. Providing individualized protection on more than 540 million acres of farmland, crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Legislators approved yet another continuing resolution to keep the government funded to the beginning of March. With this most recent action, at least half the fiscal year will be gone before a detailed spending plan is in place. North Dakota U.S. Senator John Hoeven says the situation is frustrating given work already done by the Appropriations Committee.
You know, we got all our committee work done this year. We got all 12 bills through the full appropriations process. We did it in good order. Some bills, I don't think we lost any votes. I think the most votes we lost on any one approach bill was about four. And that's sort of completely bipartisan, all teed up, ready to go early on. Well before the end of the fiscal year and just waiting to go to the floor. And we have gotten three of ours across, but that's all that Senator Schumer is allowed to come to the floor. And, of course, now we're waiting based on the new agreement between Schumer and Johnson. We have a 302A, which is a top-line number, but we're still awaiting agreement on the what's called 302Bs, which is the individual committee numbers. It's not that big a problem for us in that we can always adjust those through the conference process. The biggest issue is just what you said. Senator Schumer needs to allow us to take our bills to the floor, get them passed, and that would actually really help move the process along.
Senator, where is the compromise on the border and the funds for Ukraine and Israel? Is there a compromise?
Well, you know, we hope so, but, you know, we've got to get something that shuts down this incredible flow of people coming here illegally. We need to get something that puts a stop to it. Now, the reality is this. The Biden administration could do it right now. They have the tools to do it, both the Remain in Mexico and Third Safe Country policies, which they could re-implement. Those policies were in place under the Trump administration, and so we know they work. The Biden administration reversed them, and you've seen what has happened, more than 2.5 million people coming here illegally just last year, and it continues. So the tools are actually there. The Biden administration just won't enforce the law. And so what we're trying to get in this supplemental is something that forces the administration to actually enforce the law. That's the key. And as you said, that's also tied to whatever we do in that supplemental relative to Israel and Ukraine as well.
How do you see the House Freedom Caucus and their demands?
Well, obviously, Speaker Johnson has real challenges over there because it only takes one member to call for a motion to vacate the chair. That's a challenge. The other challenge is that historically, before the legislation goes to the House floor, they have to approve a rule. And typically, the majority party has always approved those. You know, at the point they go to the Rules Committee, they have agreement, they get the rules approved, and that hasn't been the case. So in terms of their process, it's much more difficult under the current setup that they have for Speaker Johnson. But, you know, he's a really sharp guy. He's been over to talk to us a number of times, quite impressive. You know, he did get reductions in the top-line agreement in that letter he set up with Schumer. So he is working to make reductions, and I'm hopeful, you know, that he can get his members to work with him because, again, he's very smart. He has to be sufficiently practical to move legislation, but he is trying to get reductions to spending and some of the things that are important to conservatives.
Have there been much dialogue between the House and the Senate, between budget writers and appropriators?
Well, sure. I mean, I've already met with Congressman Harris at least once, on the current bill, and we tend to meet as, as the different bills take shape. And I'm guessing that the other chairman and committee ranking members on the other approach committees are doing the same. So, again, if we can get the green light, we can go. That's just not the issue. The issue is getting leadership to green light the process so we can move forward.
How does the lack of budget affect what could be the writing of a new farm bill?
I don't think that's the real issue in terms of the timing on the farm bill. The real issue on the timing of the farm bill is going to be getting agreement to get enough farm in the farm bill. And what I mean by that is that we not only have to have things that continue to improve and strengthen the crop insurance, which is the number one risk management tool for our producers, but also for the counter-cyclical safety net, updating reference prices and so forth in ARC and PLC. That's critically important. That's what hasn't been agreed to yet by our colleagues on the other side of the aisle. And really, I think that is the key thing that has to happen to move the farm bill. And really, in a lot of these other areas, we've made good progress. And we are making some pretty good progress on crop insurance. But we really do have more work to do on the counter-cyclical safety net. In other areas, whether it's some of the livestock programs and some of the other things, we've got some good ideas on the table. But this is why we asked and got, actually worked very hard to get a full year extension, which we included in the last funding agreement for next year, so that our producers aren't, we take away that uncertainty as what, they'll be able to do next year, so they're undertaking that planning now, and they know that the farm program is going to be there fully through the next year, so that they don't have to worry about that. But the real holdup has been nailing down crop insurance and the counter-cyclical safety net. I think if we can get adequate funding and cooperation from the chairman and the folks on the Democrat side of the aisle for those programs, which is the heart, it's absolutely the key for our farmers and ranchers.
Recently, former House Ag Chairman Frank Lucas of Oklahoma had suggested he felt like that the delay in the budget would affect the writers of the farm bill because they didn't know how much money they had to spend, and that once those numbers were plugged in, it would be easier to move ahead. But as you suggest, the pay for a change in base acres and the pay for an increase in reference prices, that's yet to surface.
It depends on what you're talking about. If you're talking about the Ag Appropriations Bill, then, of course, he's right. Frank Lucas is, he knows Ag. He's great to work with. Worked with him a ton on the last farm bill. Have great respect for him. Just an all-around solid guy. And so, of course, he's right when you're talking about Ag Appropes. So if you're talking about Ag Appropes, sure. Until we get, like I say, agreement on the individual committee allocations, we're kind of stuck there. In terms of the farm bill, not so much, remember, because that's scored over a 10-year time frame. The issue there is that both the nutrition and the conservation programs have large amounts of increased funding over the last farm bill. Big amounts. And for them to take all of the additional funding and not, as I say, cover the farm portion, which is what makes everything go, is the real holdup in the farm bill.
The Inflation Reduction Act, Chairwoman Stabenow of the Senate Ag Committee, was able to secure funds for conservation. And there are a number of folks that said probably should take some of that money and move it into farm programs and crop insurance and others. Senator Stabenow says that's not a good idea.
Well, of course we should use some of that. Good grief. It's $30 billion on a 10-year score. Come on. And there's no way in the world the farmers and ranchers are going to use it if it's just set up in these conservation programs. Any and all conservation programs have to be voluntary. They cannot be mandatory. We're not going to agree to anything other that's not voluntary, farmer-friendly, flexible, not one size fits all. Those are absolutes for our farmers and ranchers. And then if you really want farmers and ranchers to use the programs, let's set up programs where we start, as I said, with making sure that we have crop insurance and the counter-cyclical safety net covered. And then as to these conservation programs, if they're on a voluntary basis and they actually work for farmers and ranchers, then they'll get used. But to come with a bunch of these Green New Deal programs that don't get used, that doesn't make any sense, and it is part of what's blocking us from getting to completing a farm bill.
So another idea that's floated from Secretary Vilsack, he suggested using CCC funds to bolster safety net spending.
Well, remember, be careful there, because the CCC already covers a number of things as it relates to the countercyclical safety net and so forth right now. So, and other programs. So you better be careful there. Furthermore, the reality is that, you know, if you utilize all of that, you don't pick up any scoring benefit there, and you reduce your flexibility if a disaster comes up that's unanticipated in the future. So I would really urge caution there. And remember, you're not picking up anything on your baseline. So I'm not really sure that helps you. And again, I see it as a way to continue to say, okay, we're going to put all the new money in nutrition and conservation and not cover the very core part of the farm program, which is the crop insurance and the safety net.
So then you come to the point, and we call it a safety net, but if we look at the economics of this year, if something doesn't change, we may well be below the cost of production for a number of producers for major crops, but not low enough to trigger reference prices.
Well, of course. How do you take the nutrition program, which is doubling in cost. It's going from about $600 billion to more than $1.2 trillion. And then you sit and say, but we're going to look at crop insurance, and we're going to look at the countercyclical safety net, and those don't need to increase. That just doesn't work. And as you said, you end up with reference prices that no longer are relevant.
So it's been a pattern over a period of time that we are spending less money from government research and more money on agriculture research is coming from private industry. Other governments than the U.S. is spending more on their agriculture research than we are. Is this a pattern that we can continue?
Well, I'm really glad you brought up ag research. And there I do see more help on the other side of the aisle, recognizing how important it is. If you're from farm country, what we've seen in terms of disease resistance and the ability to increase productivity, grow more crops in more regions of the country, more varieties, it's truly astounding. It's just absolutely unbelievable. And so it's so important that we continue that crop insurance. And that means both the research both that the Ag Research Service does, ARS, but also NEPA, the land grant university-based research. The gains that we've gotten have been huge. And you can't just look at it as great and vitally important for farmers and ranchers. We have the lowest cost, highest quality food supply in the world. Americans spend less of their budget on their food and have much better food than really anywhere else because of our farmers and ranchers and that incredible productivity, which continues to improve with ag research.
What impact do you see of climate on farm policy? And certainly conservation programs have been voluntary, but where do the funds come from that might reward farmers for carbon sequestration and other stewardship practices?
Yeah, and so this is a really important concept in terms of how we do that, right? It can't be a big, one-size-fits-all, federally funded government program that takes away resources from these other vital ag needs that you and I have been talking about. It needs to be an approach where we set various types of parameters and measurements and that kind of thing that USDA can work with, so that companies and various entities that want carbon credits and that kind of thing, can work with producers on a voluntary basis and actually get them through various conservation practices. And if it's done on a voluntary basis and not a federally funded program, but you develop metrics and those kind of things, I think not only will the farmers and ranchers use them because they'll be beneficial and voluntary, and they won't be one size fits all because our ag is so diverse across the country. And then for those that actually want to utilize it throughout our economy, they're able to do it. and you still, and you haven't taken a whole bunch of resources away from vital farm program purposes, and you haven't put a burden on the taxpayer.
What are the prospects of actually having a new farm bill in 24, or given the congressional calendar along with an election coming up, are we looking at another extension?
I think we have a chance to get the farm bill. I think we've got to hone in on what I told you before. If we can get, I mean, a lot of these things we're working together on, and I think we're getting close, a lot of the different issues, but we've got to make sure that the crop insurance and the countercyclical safety net are, funded and brought up to date so they really work for our farmers and ranchers. That's the key. Hopefully we can get there and get that farm bill done in this year.
Senator, from your opinion, the administration and the Congress, is there a balanced approach to the nation's energy security?
There has to be. We've got to make sure that we have an all-of-the-above energy policy, and not just saying it and then just having various groups only pursue one type. And we have to use common sense, and we have to have dependable, low-cost energy that's available 24/7. And that means we're going to need to keep our baseload, our oil and gas, our coal, all these other things. Now, we continue to use technology to improve environmental stewardship in a solid, common-sense way that leads the world. But it's that kind of sensible approach that we need versus this extreme Green New Deal approach, which doesn't work. And, that's what you're seeing. That's why you've seen energy prices increase as much as they have under the current administration, is because of that Green New Deal approach. And we need to get back to this approach where good, solid, sound common sense combined with technology and using all of our resources for low-cost, dependable energy.
Senator, last week, Jeff Cooper with the Renewable Fuels Association was with us on this program, and he questioned whether the EPA had the authority to offer the tailpipe emission proposals that could really shake up the type of automobiles that are available for consumers in the U.S.
Yeah, they clearly are going beyond their authority, and we see that time and time again. And they keep getting smacked down by the courts, and then they do it again. And we try to stop that through the Congressional Review Act, which, in a lot of occasions we can pass through the House and even get some of the Democrats to join us in the Senate, but then it gets vetoed by the Biden administration. So between our efforts and the court, we continue to push back on that, and we need to. And we need to get a new administration that reins EPA into the actual parameters of their mandates. They're way out beyond them right now.
Let's talk trade for a moment. You're closer to Canada than Mexico, but still, if we look at the USMCA, we have issues with the Canadians and how they're implementing dairy policy, and certainly there are concerns with Mexico over vegetables and genetically enhanced crops. How do we hold their feet to the fire for previous agreements?
You're talking to somebody who years ago battled the Canadian Wheat Board year in and year out, and so of course we are. And, one thing about Canada is they're aggressive on behalf of their farmers and ranchers. They're aggressive about it. And doggone it, we have to be more aggressive. And it's not just with Canada. Look, everybody needs our market. And we need to stand up and knock down these tariff and non-tariff trade barriers. And, that just benefits everybody. I mean, it's vitally important for our farmers and ranchers. It improves our balance of trade. And actually, it helps consumers in other countries. And so, you see Canada being probably, overly aggressive on some of these WTO issues. But what it really tells us is we need to, whether it's Canada or anybody else, we need to stand strong on these trade issues for our farmers and ranchers.
Senator, do you have concern about foreign land ownership?
Yeah, we need to restrict that. There's just no question about it. I'm on a number of bills to do that, and we need to continue to do it. It's a vital national security interest.
There is another question that is to the bigger issue following an election in Taiwan recently, certainly to impact their relationship with China, and that as well could impact our relationship with China.
To continue to support Taiwan. I was just over in Taiwan, and we need to continue to support them. They very much have a favorable view of the United States. It's very impressive. If you haven't been to Taiwan, I'd encourage you to go. I was recently there and in South Korea. We need to make them a porcupine. That's our defense strategy with them, is to, right now we've got about $16 billion in arms sales of high-tech military equipment that they're buying from us. And we need to help them continue to strengthen their own defenses. But then we also need to work with our allies in the region, including South Korea and Japan and Australia and the Philippines. And again, together with our allies, push back on this aggression that we're seeing from China.
Senator Hovind, we want to thank you for your work thus far in supporting agriculture and serving your constituents and certainly the nation. Thanks for taking time at a busy schedule to visit with us here on Open Mic. Sir, it is Open Mic, and today you've got the microphone and the last word.
Well, just great to be with you, and thanks for all you do to get important information out to our farmers and ranchers across this great country.
Our thanks to North Dakota U.S. Senator John Hovind, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nowling.